Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line in Los Angeles, is the Bone Thugs to my harmony, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. Have we reached a crossroads, Jason?
I'll see you at the crossroads, man. That's you got that one. You got that.
I'm familiar with a Bone Thugs and Harmony song.
Was that song a number one hit?
Yes.
Oh, man. The Crossroads, one of my favorite songs of all time.
It's almost even like the first of the month right now, but not
I miss my Uncle Charles, y'all. Anyway, so, Keith, we are at a little bit of a crossroads, a happy crossroads, a bittersweet crossroads. I announced actually today, we're recording this on Monday, October 5th, and you're probably hearing this on Tuesday, October 6th. If you haven't been on social media, if you don't do any of those things, you may not know that this is my last week as the Pop Shop editor of Billboard.com. It is a very weird, sad week. I am leaving Billboard after 5 amazing, incredible years and change. And I don't really want to talk about what's next. If you care about what's next, that's fine. Go check online. It's online, but it's a sad week, man, because this is my last Pop Shop podcast, but it is so far from the final Pop Shop podcast, because Keith, you're going to be manning the Pop Shop podcast boards from now on with a very special new co-host.
Yes. if you enjoyed the show while Jason was on his honeymoon, then you're really gonna like it coming up, because Katie Atkinson will be joining me under duress, whether she likes it or not.
Come on, it's not under duress. It's not like you're holding a gun to her head. Like, you join the Pop Shop podcast, you gotta do this now.
Come to the Pop Shop dark side. Katie will be joining me, and I've already told Jason my true feelings about this. I'm very sad.
You know what? We'll get into we'll get into it later. I want to get to the chart goodness first, but
let me just say, since okay. I can, because you're leaving, so you know, whatever. I like the way you're like, let me just kind of direct the conversation. I'm like, you know what? I don't think you can now, because you're leaving. Bye. Yes, we will talk about all sorts of news and events aside from the one that Jason just dropped on you. I'm sad, but Jason will go on to do fabulous things at some other place, and the Pop Shop podcast will continue to flourish and have lots of Keith and Katie on it.
Yes, and we'll get into the future of the Pop Shop podcast later in the show. Also, later in the show, we have an awesome interview with Jamie Lawson, a singer-songwriter from the UK who has been tearing it up with his single "Wasn't Expecting That." First signee to Ed Sheeran's new label, and he came in to talk about Ed and his debut album, which is out October 16th, and a lot more, so can't wait to get to that. And Keith, as always, man, some housekeeping notes. If you love the Pop Shop podcast as much as we do, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you never miss an episode. Give us a rating or review, because it makes our hearts swell with pride and joy. Follow us on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. Hit us up with any questions, of course. And if you love the Pop Shop podcast and want to explore more of the Billboard podcast realm, go to iTunes.com/billboardpodcasts. That's plural. Also, Keith, we have a ton of chart goodness to get to. Hot 100, Billboard 200, Shawn Mendes, Drake, The Weeknd, Janet Jackson, Fetty Wap, and a lot more. Man, are you ready to go?
Si, senor.
All right, man. So let's start with the Hot 100, where The Weeknd's The Hills, still number one. But, you know, so Justin Bieber's number two with What Do You Mean? Okay. And yep. What do you mean Justin Bieber's number two? Where are you now, Justin Bieber's What Do You Mean? But there at number three, man, is a song that I feel like might hit number one. Hotline Bling from Drake moves up from number four to number three. Kind of breathing down the neck of The Hills and What Do You Mean. How close are they in terms of points? How high do you think Hotline Bling can rise?
Hotline Bling looks like it jumps 4-3 this week. It has a 12% overall gain in points. And again, the Hot 100 blends airplay, sales, and streams together to come come up with the 100 most popular songs of the week in the United States. It actually has a significant gain, is fairly close to Justin Bieber, who actually had a small erosion in points this week. So Drake could overtake Justin next week. He's still a good deal behind The Weeknd at number one with The Hills, but that, I mean, at the rate Drake's going, he could be number one in the next few weeks, especially if maybe he drops a music video out of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, that could certainly pump it up, but you know, this particular single, Hotline Bling, isn't from an existing album that he has out. It's just a standalone single. Though some people have said, and maybe Jason, you can, you know, educate me further, that this may be from his Views from the Six album, which has been long rumored to be coming out at some point this year.
Yeah, it's always so tough to say with Drake because
because he surprises us.
You know, you think about some of the songs he got nominated for a Grammy on 0 to 100, and that was not on any official project, really. And you have this song, which might be his biggest hit to date, just at least as a solo artist, and we don't know really what it's on. It's not on What a Time to Be Alive, the new Future collaborative mixtape. It wasn't on If You're Reading This, It's Too Late. It might be on Views from the Six, but looking at the track record of 0 to 100, you never really know with Drake.
Yeah. The other thing to say about this song is that with its rise to number three on the Hot 100, it is actually, believe it or not, his highest charting single as a lead artist since Best I Ever Had, which went to number two in 2009. He's had, obviously, like,
Best I Ever Had.
He was on Rihanna's, you know, What's My Name, which was number one, but that was him being featured on the track. You
I
know,
love that song.
You know, but, you know, She Will from Lil Wayne, which is number three, but that was, again, Lil Wayne featuring Drake. Just kind of crazy that, you know, like there's been so much Drake music, and yet this is his highest charting single as a lead artist since 2009.
Where did Hold On, We're Going Home? That was a big hit. But
Number four,
okay. That's pretty crazy that Hotline Bling has already outcharted it in terms of Hot 100. So we shall see, or I guess Keith and Katie
shall see. You can still, you'll still be seeing from afar.
I will still be seeing from afar.
Be watching.
That's very true.
But still, you'll have to wait for those charts. Unlike now, when you get all that early chart action, not anymore, Jason. That's what happens.
What have I done?
What have you done?
Elsewhere on the Hot 100 in the top 10, Shawn Mendes gets his first top 10 hit with a song we've been talking about a lot. Stitches moves up 11 to 9. I love this song, and I'm so happy that this song has really caught on. It seems like it's a legitimate radio hit. It has been for a while, but it seems to be in heavy rotation now.
Yeah, no, it actually, it's a legit hit. It's not. It's one of those songs where, you know, it grew, and he, you know, hustled at radio, and he got a solid radio hit out of it. The song moves 11 to 9 on the Hot 100, and it's 19th week on the chart. It's up 8% in overall points. It's a solid radio hit, and you know, I think it sort of continues to tell the story of Sean, who, you know, started off on Vine, got signed to a label deal from his Vine videos, and then saw his first album debut at number one on the Billboard 200 without any radio support.
Yeah,
like, period. And then since then, he's like basically done it in like a really sort of backwards sort of way, which kind of speaks to how he and a lot of people from his generation, the sort of the YouTuber social media generation, have really kind of changed the game in how you can find success in the music business.
Yeah, we saw earlier this year another act with a huge social support, Fifth Harmony, take a couple swings at a radio hit and miss, and then finally connect with Worth It. I think that it just helps so much when you have all of that social support. I guess you could say it might just give an artist like Shawn Mendes some more time. Like if an artist without that backing puts out a lead single and it doesn't really ignite the world, maybe, you know, people get impatient, people want a new project already, people don't want to put out more singles from this project. But because he has that support, you have Stitches slowly grow. And just what do you think about that? Do you think I'm off base here?
No, I think you need both. I mean, in the perfect world, you need fans, like passionate fans, and you need a consensus radio hit. And you know, you can be someone like Omi, mm-hmm, with Cheerleader, But I don't think his fans are sort of the Fifth Harmony type passionate fan base. You could be Fifth Harmony with a lot of passionate fans, but no actual real mainstream hit singles. So if you can kind of meet in the middle and become someone who has a passionate fan base with a very active social online, very engaged fan base, but also get radio on your side, get programmers on your side, and get, you know, people who are not always on Twitter to care about you. Yeah. And that's the trick. And that's, I think Fifth Harmony's been able to do that. And you got some scoop last week when you talked to one of the ladies from Fifth Harmony.
Oh, yeah, that is
true.
They're
working with Max Martin now on their next album, evidently.
Yeah, so I talked to Lauren from Fifth Harmony, and that interview's up on Billboard.com. We'll link to it in the podcast post. But yeah, so they're going all out on their second album, and they're already started. I think they're going overseas in late October, early November for a couple international tour dates. But for now, in the next weeks and days and whatnot, they are at Max Martin's LA compound cranking
dun,
out songs.
Dun.
So
yeah, when I talked to Camila at iHeart, she said, yeah, like tomorrow, like we're flying to LA to start working on the album. And
yeah,
she did not say anything about Max Martin, though. So you got the real scoop, I
got that real scoop, man.
Well, you know, because you're good, you're in good with the Fifth Harmony.
I try. Yeah. Elsewhere on the Hot 100, a couple debuts I wanted to note. Alive by Sia, the song that was co-written by Sia, Tobias Gesso Jr., and some lady named Adele.
Some woman named Adele. You may have heard of her.
Who is that Adele? That debuts at number 56. And Keith, I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, man, but I feel like this is a little bit of a soft debut for Alive. I was kind of expecting some more firepower. I don't know. I mean, I know that Sia is mostly known for Chandelier, but you figure, like, for lead single from the first album, and Adele co-wrote it, and it has this splashy debut, and I don't know. What did it not? What did you think about this?
Well, I mean, you know, one or two. I mean, really, I mean, how many real big hits does Sia have, like, yeah, as a artist? Chandelier. And, you know, there's, like, another couple minor hits, but I mean, Chandelier was the song.
Yeah.
And just because you have a song or two that was a hit does not necessarily mean that everyone is, you know, you're automatically going to just generate hit after hit after hit. So I think it's not about the first week, it's about the long run. And I think, as we saw with Chandelier and all the songs from her last album, 1000 Forms of Fear, it was about sort of a long process and a long run. And I think that's what they're probably setting up this album, this next project for. And so it's not just about the first week. I wouldn't let that like taint anyone's picture of what this song can do. It's one of those sort of full throttle, like big voice, like, you know, whoa moment type songs, which Sia does great. And when I heard it, I actually heard it for the first time back in October. Before the VMA, so in September sometime.
Mm-hmm.
No, August?
August, yeah.
Yeah, August. I heard it for the first time then, and I was just, like, sort of blown away by, like, just how big of a song it is. And I'm like, I don't know how she could possibly, like, perform this, like, more than, like, a couple times, because it would just blow her voice out. It's just one of those songs.
It really is something. And, you know, I wrote about Alive and how it was originally written for Adele, and then I talked to the producer, Jesse Shatkin, and he said Adele politely turned it down. And then they considered sending it to Rihanna. And then finally, Sia just said, I want this for myself. So I think it's a great song, and I hope that it latches on at radio. I know it's just getting started there, but I'm bullish on Alive. That's how I feel about that one, man.
All right.
Also, in that kind of soaring operatic mode that we are just speaking of, Writings on the Wall, Sam Smith's James Bond theme song to Spectre, debuts at number 71. And this was a kind of a limited chart week for that one, right? Didn't it come out? Like, didn't it just come out?
Yeah, it came out on a Friday, so it
came
out on the right
day.
Oh,
okay. So maybe I'm wrong. Okay.
Yeah. Nope, that's its debut. 71 on the Hot 100. I think it's one of those things where it's again starts off slow. I don't think Sam was necessarily going to have. I mean, I think the perception would be like, oh, Sam Smith coming back, you know, with his first, you know, new single after a string of hits from his last album, you know. But I think because this is a James Bond theme and because it's a slower song, you know, maybe those things were working against it. So, yeah, I don't know why it didn't start bigger. But I think, you know, considering that the movie that this song is associated with, which is called Spectre, does not come out until, I want to say, like, mid-November?
Yeah, I think around then.
This is one of those songs where it's going to be, it's not just about the first week. Again, it's the long haul, and this song hopefully will stick around for the next few months. Strangely, though, when they just announced, I mean, strangely but not so strangely, they just announced a upcoming deluxe reissue of Sam's album, The Writing's on the Wall. No, not The Writing's on the Wall.
The Lonely Hour.
I apologize. But The Writing's on the Wall, which is the name of the single, will not be on Sam's deluxe version of this album, which probably isn't that surprising because they probably want to retain it for Bond-related activities.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's sort of a soft start. But, you know, on the flip side, over in the UK, it became the first theme song from a James Bond film to hit number one on the official UK singles chart.
Oh, wow. So I did not know that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this song. I feel like, I don't know, are you a fan of Writings on the Wall? Have we talked about this?
We haven't really talked about it. I mean, I like it. I kind of, it's very, it's what you expect of a James Bond theme. Just much in the way, you know, Skyfall was very sort of like channels that classic Shirley Bassey kind of big voiced, you know, strings and orchestra swells and, you know, but at the same time, you know, how is the Sam Smith song really that different from any other Sam Smith song? You know, it's, I don't know. What do you think, Jason?
No, I feel the exact same way. I feel like with a James Bond theme song, and this really isn't Sam Smith's fault, if you deviate too much from what's expected of a James Bond theme song, you're going to get criticized. But I feel like this plays it a little too safe. And I feel like he looked at the Skyfall playbook and said, this is what worked for Skyfall. I should think about what worked for Skyfall. And I think what worked for that is going to work for me. And I don't know, like, I was saying that I kind of like if say in an alternate universe that his song with Disclosure, Omen, was the James Bond theme song, where it's kind of like a little spooky and it's dancey, but it's not too far off the beaten path. I kind of would like that more.
You're kind of, as you said, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah,
James
exactly.
Bond theme. You're kind of. And we talked about this when you were gone on your honeymoon, actually, when the news came out that Sam was doing the song. Katie and I talked about it, and we had this whole recap of our favorite Bond theme songs.
I listened to that segment. Yeah. Yours was Duran Duran, right?
I know Duran Duran was in there.
Yeah.
So was Madonna's. And, you know, Madonna's Die Another Day is one of those songs where there's some elements of Bond in it, but it's very distinctly Madonna. So I think Sam held on to the sort of expected recipe of a James Bond theme, kept it within his wheelhouse. I like the song. I wish it might have been, you know, take a few more chances with it. I really wish maybe the song would have been called Spectre. You know, or work in the lyric Spectre. Because, you know, it's not like he was doing a movie called Octopussy. You know, he could have, where it's like Octopussy. I mean, no, you have to clearly name that something else.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the specters in the wall.
I kind of like your fake Octopussy song, though. I got to say that.
Yeah, I'm sure that was probably demoed at some point by some singer. yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
Anyway, so that debuts at number 71 on this week's Hot 100. Let's discuss a couple songs that are not in the top 10, not in the top 20, and might not even be in the top 40. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But we think they're going to be hits soon enough, nonetheless, and that's why we call this segment Soon to Be Hits! All right, man, we got two Soon to Be Hits this week. I think I'm going to go first, if that's okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to surprise you because I'm going to change mine midstream. You don't even know what mine's going to be.
I have no idea what yours is going to be. So the soon-to-be hit that I'm going to be talking about this week is from someone who has had some success on the Hot 100 this year. His name is Fetty Wap. You might know him from his many, many hits of 2015, including Trap Queen and 679 and My Way. Worth pointing out that his latest single, again, moves up to 39 on this week's Hot 100, giving him yet another top 40 hit. This is, I believe, the fourth official single from his self-titled debut album, which we are going to get to on the Billboard 200 albums chart in a second. But I wanted to point this one out, and Keith actually tipped me off that it enters the top 40 this week, and I thought this was perfect because I think that in the same way that My Way and 679 didn't really have that kind of sustained success as much as Trap Queen, which is obviously very difficult to capture once again, I think that again is maybe the song that can do it for him to get him back into that top 10 and top 5. Trap Queen obviously peaked at number 2. I don't know if Again is going to get it there, but I think that this song is going to be around for a while. So that is my soon-to-be hit.
Woohoo!
What's yours, man?
I know. And Jason's like, what are you changing this to?
I have no idea, yeah.
I had an epiphany. Not really an epiphany. But I feel that my soon-to-be hit should actually be Lady Gaga's cover of I Want Your Love.
Oh!
Hey-o!
Which
is not even a single. It's not even a single, but it came out last Friday as like just a special one-off cover that she did for Tom Ford's new fashion line, his new collection. And instead of presenting a traditional runway show, he decided to make a music video that was soundtracked to a cover of Chic's I Want Your Love by Lady Gaga. And of course, Lady Gaga is actually in the video. And she's strutting down the runway with a lot of, you know, glamorous models and glamorous clothes. And Nile Rodgers, of course, of Chic, who we've had on the show before, plays bass on the track. So I'm like, I tweeted this. I'm all in on this cover. I hope that Gaga's label Interscope does something with this. You know, even if they just sort of like softly release it as a white label promo to club DJs or something. You know, I would just like to see this on our charts because I think it's so cool and so awesome, and it's nice to see like Gaga doing like a great classic dance song, and it's just awesome. So I hope it's a hit. I don't know if it will be because maybe it's not even a single, but I think it could be a hit. So there you go. There's my soon to be hit. Lady Gaga's cover of Chic's I Want Your Love.
Lady Gaga, by the way, worth noting, our Women of the Year at Billboard.
Indeed. We'll be honoring her later this year.
Very, very cool. And it's just been a big year for Gaga, even though she didn't necessarily put out an album this year.
Academy Awards performance, tributing the Sound of Music, the Tony Bennett tour that she had, this new the American Horror Story. She stars in the TV show on FX. Kind of a big year.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And the song she just put out with Diane Warren is really a stunner as well. So yeah. I can't wait to hear some more Lady Gaga music, man. So Fetty Wap and Lady Gaga on this week's Soon to Be Hits. All right, man. Speaking of Fetty Wap, we have a new number one album on the Billboard 200 albums chart, and it is Fetty Wap by Fetty Wap.
Funny how that works out.
So, Keith, you it's true. Keith, you wrote about it this week, and to me, this is a pretty impressive debut, man.
It's an all right debut.
Just all right. Interesting.
It's just all right. Funny, like, I had actually heard sort of rumblings of a larger start for this particular album a while back, but I think those were just sort of rumblings. It never really got to like a confirmed forecast, so to speak. The album, as we said, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. It moved 129,000 equivalent album units in the week ending October 1st, according to Nielsen Music. Of that figure, 75,000 were actually album sales. The rest of that figure was made up of track equivalent albums and streaming equivalent albums, because, you know, of course, the Billboard 200 is that fancy math where we combine album sales with tracks and streams, and we get the most popular albums in the country. Woohoo! So Fetty Wap is number one. It's an all right week. I kind of thought it would be bigger after all the success he's had with his singles, but it's really difficult to get sort of perceived singles oriented artist to have those fans translate that into album sales, as we see. But still, 75,000 isn't that bad. Pretty good number. Could have been bigger. It actually wasn't the top-selling album of the week. Do you know what the top-selling album of the week was in terms of pure album sales?
Jeez, you're putting me on the spot, man.
Guess you didn't read my story there, did you, Jason?
Was it Future and Drake?
No, actually, it was Don Henley's new album, Cass County. It sold 87,000 copies last week. Its overall unit total was 89,000. That makes him the number three album on the Billboard 200, but the number one album on our top album sales chart. So it's, again, one of those weeks where we have differing albums atop the sales chart and the overall Billboard 200 chart.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, though, because we note, obviously, how much each album sells. And even though Fetty Wap wasn't number one on the sales chart, he's number one because
he's the most popular album this
year.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That, you took the words right out of my mouth. Here's the thing. I think that this is impressive for Fetty Wap because if you think about it, the Trap Queen has cooled off a little bit. I mean, it's not really a radio staple anymore. He's had some songs really connect. Obviously, My Way and 679, both top 10 hits, I believe. And now, again, is like I just said, is rising. But he didn't come into this September 25th release with a ton of momentum. Plus, it was such a hugely busy week for album releases. And it always kind of is with the last week of September because
last
it's a lot
of Grammys.
Yeah, last week of Grammy eligibility. I think that this is I would be very okay if I was Fetty Wap's team with this debut. It's a number one debut.
He's number one. There you go. That's
and it's the first, as you pointed out in your piece, the first number one for a hip-hop debut since A$AP Rocky, like 2.5 years ago in January 2013.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, like I said, ton of top 10 debuts. Do you want to break down a couple more, man?
Yeah, I will.
So many
top 10 hits. In fact, I mean, so many top 10 debuts. In fact, there's seven debuts in the top 10 this week on the Billboard 200. Of course, Fetty Wap leads the pack at number one. And then Don Henley debuts at number three with Cass County. That's actually his highest charting solo album ever. Number four is George Strait's Cold Beer Conversation. Number six is a debut from Thomas Rhett, another country singer, with his album called Tangled Up. Number eight, debut from Churches, Every Open Eye.
Great album.
Number nine, debut for Disclosure, Caracole.
Great album.
And number 10, Dead Weather debuts with Dodge and Burn.
Very cool, man. A lot of great music that came out this week.
Everyone rushing in for that last week of Grammy eligibility.
Yeah. And Keith, I want to talk about next week on the Billboard 200, and it seems like Unbreakable by Janet Jackson is going to be the big album debut. Is it gunning for number one?
It looks like it has a shot at number one right now. I mean, it seems to be like the biggest album that came out last week. I think the next biggest might be like Tamar Braxton's album, possibly. Because mm-hmm. you had this big rush in like the last 2 weeks of September, and then there was a little bit of a gap and breathing room, and I think Janet's taking advantage of that, accidentally or not. Her album, according to very early industry forecasts, mm-hmm. may do around 100,000 overall units. Most of that figure actually could be album sales. She could be looking at a number one debut on the Billboard 200. And that would actually mark her, hold on, I've got numbers, that would mark her seventh number one album. She previously hit number one with, in order from the most recent to the first, Discipline back in 2008, All For You in 2001, The Velvet Rope in 1997, the Janet Period album in 1993, Rhythm Nation 1814, or more fully, Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814 in 1989, and of course, Control in 1986. So it looks like Janet may hit number one. Stay tuned to Billboard.com for all of our forecasts as the week progresses.
So Keith, just a quick question before we move on from Janet. I'm a little surprised in a good way by this number, if early industry forecasts do hold, and it does sell around 100,000. I mean, we've seen over the past couple of years that we've talked about it on the show, the kind of aging diva rule, where artists with amazing track records but without any kind of current radio hit have real trouble selling albums. So you saw it from Mariah, and you saw it from Kylie, and you saw it from Jennifer Lopez. What is separating Janet Jackson from that? Because as far as I can tell, nothing has really taken off at radio from this new album.
Well, I mean, No Sleep, which was, or No Sleep, which was the first single from the album, has done okay on adult R&B radio, which...
A song I really like again.
Oh, that's one of those songs that's actually, like, the first listen, you're like, this is cool. And, like, the fourth listen, you're like, all right, this is one of those slow-burning jams that you can, like, listen to, and there's very little burn on it. Like, it just, you can repeat it, which is a great signal of a song that will hold on. I like the song. The video's awesome. It's weird how, like, there's some sort of voodoo where Janet doesn't look any different than she did in, like, 1993, basically. But I think, you know, I think a lot of this has to do with just the excitement of having Janet Jackson back with her first new studio album in forever, like, since 2008, I think, was her last one. So it's been a very long time since a new studio album, and she's on tour right now. And
yeah.
Like, boatloads of hits, just nothing but the hits in these shows, and, like, the shows are selling great, and I think there's kind of, like, this just warm embrace of all things Janet. So it's not necessarily about, like, the songs not working, it's just anything Janet-related will do, you know, pretty okay right now. The point to ponder, Discipline started, her last album, started with 181,000 in its first week. Granted, that was 7 years ago. So that's, you know, a million years ago. To compare Mariah Carey's last new studio album, which was Me, I Am Mariah, The Elusive Chanteuse.
The Elusive Chanteuse.
Started with 58,000 in its first week. So, you know, I think, you know, and Mariah hadn't gone away for that long, you know, comparatively. So I think this is, you know, actually, if we think about it, it's actually a pretty good number considering, you know, what year we are at, where no one really sells albums anymore. And I think it also speaks to her kind of, like, legacy and how she has a lot of fans that are coming out to support her in the first week. And that will probably be reflected on next week's Billboard 200 chart.
I think it also helps that she came out with this new album on the right week, because next week we have Selena Gomez, the week after Demi Lovato, the week after that 5 Seconds of Summer. So I think that if she is going to score a number one album debut, this was the week to put out her album.
It's all about timing.
All right, man. So you guys will keep track of Janet Jackson's Unbreakable album on future Pop Shop podcasts. So we got to get to Jamie Lawson again, singer-songwriter out of the UK with a ton of talent and an incredible backstory. 39 years old and was friends with Ed Sheeran when they were both touring the UK together.
He's 39?
39 years old, man.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that.
His song, Wasn't Expecting That, was a hit in 2011 in Ireland, and Ed Sheeran took a huge shine to that song, and after Ed Sheeran became a superstar and set up his own label within Atlantic, Gingerbread Man Records, Jamie became the first signee to Gingerbread Man Records. He's been opening for Ed Sheeran. He opened for One Direction. A quick backstory, actually. Before Jamie came in for the Pop Shop podcast interview, I actually spoke to him on the phone for a Q&A that's actually going to run separately from the Pop Shop podcast. And when I talked to him, it was the afternoon of his first show opening for One Direction in the O2 Arena over in London. And
no pressure.
Midway through our phone conversation, he, like, cut out for a second. And then he came back and he was like, hey, sorry for that. Harry Styles just walked by me, and I wanted to say hi and introduce myself. And, like, I was like, wow, like, you could have gone and, like, talked to him for a couple minutes. Like, I was like, you didn't have to keep talking to me, man. That's fine. But James is a really cool guy, and his debut, self-titled debut album, comes out in the States on October 16th. We talked about Ed Sheeran and breaking it into the U.S. and all that and more. Here's Jamie Lawson on the Pop Shop Podcast.
It was only a smile, but my heart, it went wild. I wasn't expecting that.
Do you feel disconnected from the song in the sense that it's 4 years ago that it was a hit in Ireland, and 4 years ago, or longer than 4 years ago, you actually wrote these words?
No, I don't. I have no sense of disconnection. It's still one of those songs that moves me. I still smile every time I sing it. It's just weird. You know, there
well,
are. I have
special.
Other songs that I've that you know that I may have written at a similar time that I have less connection to. But for whatever reason, this one sticks. Yeah. Which is good because I have to sing it a lot.
I mean, that's pretty rare to get a song. Like, I couldn't go back to something I wrote 4 years ago as a journalist or as a writer and be like, oh, I'm right where I am. And I am right at that same point. But it's great that this song seems so universal and it seems to really capture who you are that you can be, that you can do that.
It's, because of the song, of the nature of the song, which is the fact that we go from the beginning of this relationship, from the moment they met to the very end, you can come in at it at any point. So the fact now that I am 4 years, 5 years down the line from when I wrote it, and I am in a different stage of my life, just means I slot into the song at a different point.
Yeah.
So I can still see myself in there. And just like anyone else that picks up on it, whether it's, you know, One Direction fans,
yeah,
who are very young, they connect to it because they're at the start of this song. And yet those One Direction fans, parents, grandparents, who are with them at these gigs, take them to these gigs and then come up and say, oh, you know, I really enjoyed it. I didn't want to come to the show. I had to bring my kids, but I'm really glad I did. This means a lot to me too now. You know, I'm going to be getting all your music. So everybody fits in it somewhere.
Speaking of which, you just played a couple gigs with One Direction.
Yep.
What were those screaming fans like? What was it, intimidating at all?
I was very anxious, isn't the word. Skeptical.
Okay.
As to why I would be there, because it came from their side, so we were invited rather than most. Usually for these sort of things, you know, people. There must have been a lot of bands going to One Direction, yeah, saying we'd love to open up for you. And, you know, people pay to get on those tours, you know, but they came to us. So I didn't know how it was going to work. I kind of did it because that's a massive opportunity to reach a lot of people that you would never reach. And if you only reach 10% of them, that's a lot of people still. Yeah. So far I've been really overwhelmed and pleasantly surprised by the fact that these kids, as we're calling them, are connecting to the songs, you know.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
I want to ask about Ed and signing to his label, and just the fact that I'm sure you've gotten a million questions about this, but just in the fact that, do you ever wonder what he saw in you and what he heard in your music? Because I'm sure this dude gets so many demos, and I'm sure that he hears a ton of singer-songwriters who are aspiring to be like him and be playing on these huge stages. What do you think connected you guys?
Well, he says it's that he heard Wasn't Expecting That and cried, and he says he never has an emotional response, wow, to music. He does for films and TV or whatever, but never to music. So I think that probably shook him to think that maybe this is something different. And he said he still cried the sixth time he listened to it.
Wow. So,
you know, it's that emotional response. And he heard other songs and thought they were good too, you know. So we've got songs that live up to Wasn't Expecting That, which is good. It's a good place to be at.
You know,
there's things to follow and come through after it. He talks about it as if he can't believe I've not been signed before. Like, he just assumed that would happen. And to some extent, I probably did too. And it didn't. But I just kind of, I always thought that I had the songs and the talent to do it.
Yeah.
To back it up. To you know, I knew that my music and my songs connected to people when people heard it. It was just a case of getting it to people.
Yeah.
That was the struggle. So I'm very grateful to him for taking the chance. He doesn't see it as a chance at all. He saw it as a no-brainer, but it is a chance. He's put his artistic integrity on the line in some ways by saying, I think you should listen to this because it's good. So I'm very grateful.
Oh, isn't it strange how life can be changed in the flicker of the sweetest smile?
So thanks again to Jamie Lawson for stopping by the podcast. Again, his debut album, also called Jamie Lawson, is out October 16th. go check out Wasn't Expecting That, which was, like I said, a hit in 2011 and now is taking off in the States.
You know what's interesting, before you move on,
yeah,
is that when you said he was 39, I was stunned because yeah. you just don't hear about, you know, pop singers on the radio who are over the age of like 22.
I know, it's crazy.
So he and Rachel Platten, who are both in their, she's 34, mm-hmm. And she had a big hit, of course, but she still has a hit right now. And Fight then now song, you have yeah. Jamie, who is on our adult pop songs chart with Wasn't Expecting That. He's in the top, well, 20 with that track. I don't know if it moves up this week. I wonder, I mean, I think that gives, it gives some quote unquote older pop artists some hope that maybe it's not all just about the Viners who have great cheekbones and are like, you know, 14, you know, like, which are great too. There's room for all of them. There's room for everyone in this game. And if we can have a little bit more room for some 39-year-old singer songwriters, that's great too.
I think I know where you're hinting at, man.
I'm not that far away from Jamie's age. I can make it happen, I think.
Well, we can make it happen. That's right. That's my thing, is
we always joked about this.
If Rachel Platten and Jamie Lawson can make it in this world, damn it, Keith, so can we. Let's go. Let's form our – weren't we going to form like a reggae group at some point?
We were going to do a reggae track, because that would be – if we did a reggae song, it would be the easiest to get onto our reggae digital songs chart, because you don't have to sell a whole lot, because reggae songs don't sell that much. That was my theory.
Oh, my goodness. I
could
can't
do like
wait.
A new age track, a new age reggae track. Double our chances.
Next summer, man, it's going to be 2015 was the summer of Omi's Cheerleader. 2014 was the summer of Magic's Rude. And 2016 will be the pop reggae stylings of Jason and Keith.
We can perform it at the Hot 100 Festival next year.
Yes. Yes, we can. Keith, it's time, man, for your chart stat of the week.
Okay, so my chart stat of the week is about someone who is near and dear to my heart. Well, it's not about what Jason thinks it is.
Oh, no, really?
No, I didn't go there. I actually asked Jason, like, hey, what do you want the chart stat of the week to be about? And then he suggested who it was. And I'm like, oh, I can't.
Then you said no? I can't believe it.
So I'm still gonna make it somewhat related to you and I.
Let's see what you got.
This week in 1973, on October 6th, Cher hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Half Breed. That's all I ever heard. Half Breed. How I love to hate the word. And of course, this was one of four number one solo hits for Cher. She also hit the top with Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves, Dark Lady, Dark Lady, and then Believe in 1999. Why this is important is not just because it happened this week in history, but also because we discussed Cher on the very first Billboard Pop Shop podcast just slightly more than 2 years ago on October 3rd, 2013. So it's like a fake chart stat of the week. It's just me saying, hey, Cher was number one, and oh, by the way, on our first show, we also talked about Cher.
Unbelievable. Should we tell? We got to tell people what we're going to say. So you asked me my favorite chart stat.
Yeah.
And I said, I immediately have one, because it's the only chart stat I ever like know and remember in terms of like historical chart stats. And it is the biggest sales week, debut sales week, I believe. But I think overall sales week.
Might be, yeah.
For a rock album.
In the Nielsen Music Era.
In the Nielsen Music Era.
Yeah.
The biggest debut sales week for a rock album is... Now you're racking your brain. You're like, wow, there are some great rock albums that have come out over the past... You know, when was Nielsen era? It was like 92?
1991.
So 24 years. What? None could outsell in one single frame Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water, Limp Bizkit. I think it sold close to a million copies in 1 week, and it passed a Pearl Jam album, I believe, Versus, to become the record holder. And I don't think that record will ever be broken. So Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. The chart stat that I wanted, the chart stat that people wanted, not the chart stat we got. We got Cher. Thank you, Keith, for your chart stat of the week. Oh, man, oh, man. So, yeah, so as I said at the top of the show, so I am, after, You know, it's funny because I keep saying after 5 years at Billboard, I joined the Billboard staff in July 2010.
But you were here before that, weren't you?
I was. I started in August 2008 as an editorial intern. To give you some perspective of how long I've been associated with Billboard, the week that I started at Billboard as an intern, the big news story was that John McCain had selected a relative unknown named Sarah Palin to be his running mate. So we're going way back. So it's been over 7 years. I'm 28 years old, so that's a quarter of my life at Billboard. And this was a very emotional thing for me. And I'm incredibly excited about my next step. And, you know, like I said, if you want to find out what I'm doing next, I'm not going to plug it here. I will say that I will be podcasting still at my next location.
Oh, really? Now I have competition?
Yeah.
Jeez, man. You're already making it hard enough. I have to keep this thing afloat without you. And then now you're going to have a competition. I bet you this other show you'll have will launch on a Tuesday each week, won't it?
The new
you might talk about charts, won't you?
The new podcast. The new podcast will strictly be a Pop Shop Podcast takedown podcast where you guys
each
will
week
post.
You just like rip into the Pop Shop. Like,
exactly.
Keith rambling about this week?
You guys will post on Tuesday and we'll listen and post on Wednesday. Be like, well, here are some factual errors and I hated this part. And no, I'm of course I'm kidding.
I want you to do it in that voice each week. It's Jason Lampshot saying, welcome. I've got my eye on the world.
Anywho, so about 2.5 years ago or so, it was like the summer of 2013, I kept pushing to have a podcast on Billboard. I thought that it would just make a ton of sense. And
we had never had one before. Billboard we had had other sort of like, you know, like live, you know, weekly sort of video things, but we'd never had a podcast.
Yeah. And it's funny because they were like, okay, do you want this to just be you? And I was like, no, I need a co-host. And they were like, okay, well, X, Y, and Z like are in the New York office on the charts team. They would be great. And obviously everybody else would have been great. But I said, no, we got to get Keith. Because Keith, even though we're
cheapest person available, so totally worked out. I was Keith, the most affordable person in the
exactly. His contract was his podcasting contract was very affordable.
Right.
No, Keith was the obvious choice just because of your personality and your knowledge and your wit and of course your love for Madonna. Got to keep in the Madonna fan.
Yeah, you need that every week on the show.
And so we posted our first podcast October 3rd, 2013. It sounded much worse than it does now.
Yeah, don't go back and listen to it.
Please never go back and listen to those. But I can honestly say, and I said this when we had our 100th episode about a couple months ago, but this really is one of my favorite parts of my time at Billboard is just being on the phone with Keith, sometimes in person, but being on the phone with Keith and just chopping it up, and it's just a blast. I can't describe how much fun. I know that we do this for an audience, but like I would just do this myself, like anytime. And I'm sure that I'm gonna be calling you and bugging you about chart stats and music, and be like, hey, what do you think about this?
How's that new Tove Lo single selling?
Yeah, how's that Charlie XCX?
There's always a core group of pop artists that I know you're going to call me and ask for. How's that new Fifth Harmony track burning up the charts?
Exactly. So I'm very excited about my next step, but I'm very sad to be leaving the Pop Shop Podcast. Two things, though. First of all, I beg all of you to continue listening to the Pop Shop Podcast. I know you guys will anyway. You don't need me to beg you, but Katie does such a fantastic job. She's one of my favorite people at Billboard, along with Keith, of course. And when you guys were doing it together, when I was on my honeymoon, I was listening. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like the show will continue to be great. She's so knowledgeable. She's so funny. And I can't wait to hear what you guys do together. The other thing I want to mention is that although this is my last show as Pop Shop Podcast co-host, I've already told Keith and Katie I am 100% crashing future episodes as a special guest person or panelist or co-host or whatever the hell you want to call me, but this is very far from my last Pop Shop Podcast appearance.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when and if you are on red carpets with me, but you are working for a different outlet. So, you know, at the American Music Awards, at the Grammy Awards next year, or at perhaps the Billboard Music Awards, when you may be there representing whatever new publication you work for, and hopefully I have a better spot than you on the carpet.
You definitely will. No, you definitely will.
Hey, you never know. Then you can come by and I can interview you. And like, it's like I can interview you for the show, but in a different capacity. Like,
no, we should never do that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
We should definitely never do that. But yeah, man, I'm sad to be leaving you, but thank you for all of the fun times. And I'm going to miss the show. I'm going to miss you. But I know that we will stay in touch both on the podcast and off the podcast.
We will. I'm not getting emotional now. I'm like, it'll be fine. You'll be all right. Everything will be awesome. Every week on the Pop Shop podcast, the guest will be Madonna, or at least her voicemail. Because she just refuses to call me back.
That'd be awesome if you just kept like, let's go to Madonna's voicemail to see what it has to say. And it's just, hello, you've reached Madonna. I'm not here right now.
If Madonna calls, I'm not here. It's like, it's just like every week it's a voicemail from another diva. I've called Cher's voicemail.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I'm calling Shania Twain's voicemail. Sorry.
I can't believe you made the charts that Cher. That's fantastic.
It makes perfect sense.
Keith, do you have any parting words?
If I could turn back time, I wouldn't do it any different, Jason.
Ah, thanks, man. Hey. I appreciate that. We're definitely not going to go out on a Cher song.
No.
We're definitely
going to
get out of here with that. It is my last show as co-host, so we are going to go out on Michelle Branch's Goodbye to You. Thank you guys all for listening. Please keep in touch. Keep listening to the Pop Shop podcast, and thank you guys all for the kind words. Thanks again, and take care.